get ready.
Man, I don't ever want to be so woke that me and the KKK are out here agreeing on the same shit. Before they were killing people to keep us from voting, now we talk ourselves out of the shit.
For real talk.
Before you get out here loud and wrong talking about minimum wages and starter jobs, educate yourself on why the minimum wage was created in the first damn place.
All the time.
You shouldn't be the same person you were 10 years ago. You should be growing towards a better you every day. And the only ones who will be threatened by that are the ones who refuse to grow and are scared their ass gonna get left behind.
Welcome to the Span Report with your host, Mr. Span.
Yo, what's going on, everybody? Welcome to the Span Report podcast. I am your host, Mr. Span. This is episode number 285 of the report. And y'all might notice something. We're doing shit a little bit different, man. Normally what we would do is we would start this show off with some tunes. We'd be jamming out to some hip hop or some R&B or whatever, you know. And for a long time, man, that's pretty much how I got down. Man, I remember when I first started doing the show. Used to have like music playing sporadically throughout the show. Used to have musical breaks quite frequently. As a matter of fact, that used to be an annoyance of some of the earlier listeners of the Span Report, man. Like, yo, man, hey, I want to hear you talk, nigga. Why you playing so much music, nigga? Like, that was kind of a thing, right? But, one of the things I was thinking about, and this happened like last week when I had Stephanie from the Mocha Minutes podcast and also Cook from the Highly Inappropriate podcast on last week, was like, yo, we kicked the show off last week and we didn't have any music. And mostly it was like because I just couldn't find anything I really felt like listening to, right? And a lot of times when I have guests on, I let them choose what music they want to kind of come into, right? Almost like, you know, wrestling or some shit. But real talk, man, I think I'm going to kind of go away from that. And there's a couple different reasons for that. One is I want to expand the way that people can listen to the show. And one of the ways to do that is, like, I've been really thinking about just, like, kind of posting episodes of the show on YouTube. Now, for those of you who watch YouTube or, like, have podcast on YouTube, you know that, like, YouTube is really sticklers about, like, music and everything else being played on videos or whatever else. And I remember I used to do the show live on YouTube, and every time I would post a show live on YouTube, part of the reasons I never was able to like monetize on any of that was because I was playing like, you know, music like to start the show. Like I'd always get like hit up with a with an email like 24, like not even 24 hours. It probably like 24 minutes after the video went live. Like, yo, there's a copyright claim on this. And whoever owns the copyright is now going to get stats on your video. And that way they can monetize on your shit. Right. So if I use 30 seconds of some music on YouTube, like no matter what the context of it was, like, yeah, they getting the money. Like if you wanted to monetize, you really couldn't. Right. But it's not even really about the monetization of it. I just kind of want to, use YouTube as a way to like kind of distribute the podcast more. So you might, if you know, for those of you who use YouTube, you might start seeing episodes of the Span Report podcast on the Span Report Podcast Network's YouTube channel. It won't be like whole like video or whatever. It's just mostly the audio from the shows or whatever. But, you know, a lot of folks are using YouTube more and more to listen to podcasts. And so that's one of the reasons why I've decided that, like, yo, I might not necessarily be using music to kick off the shows anymore, man. I mean, it's a bit of a change. I know some people like it. Some people were like telling me that they found out new music because of, you know, me playing some music on the show or whatever. But, yeah, man, you know, just try to do something different here for the show. And also, real talk, I couldn't find shit this week either. Couldn't find shit this week either. So we just gonna rock out the way we rocking out, man. And that's what it's gonna be. But before we get into the show, of course, I gotta remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Span Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up the hotline at area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages, and of course, those messages will get read here live on the show and responded to in kind. I said read, right? I said, you know what? Listen to. Here live on the show and responded to. You can also email us here at feedback@thespanreport.com. That's feedback@thespanreport.com. Go ahead and leave us those emails. And of course, those emails will get read here and responded to here live on the show. And of course, we got an email this week. So we're going to read that email and respond to that email. Also, hit me up on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Also, man, hit us up on iTunes and or Stitcher Radio. and CastBox. Well, no, not CastBox, but the 5-star reviews, man, on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. We really do appreciate everybody who does that, man. It goes a long way. It goes a long way towards, helping the podcast that you listen to get found by other people who are interested in listening to podcasts, man. And it, like, when they're looking for some shit to listen to, they're like, hey, this shit got 5 stars. Let me see what that's about. So it's one way to kind of help put on for the show. Doesn't cost you a dime. Just a couple minutes of your time to let everybody know why you're rocking with us over here, right? Also, CastBox. If you're listening to us on CastBox, leave us some comments on CastBox. Let us know what you're thinking about the show on CastBox, and we will read those CastBox comments here live on the show as well. Go to our website, www.thespanreport.com. You can go there, watch replays. It's been kind of a thing with CastBox. I'm sorry, with Crowdcast and the website as far as embedding the videos there. So you can go there. You can listen to the website. You can listen to the podcast. You can vote in the polls when we put one up. You can leave comments there. And you can also donate to the podcast there as well. You can hit up our Patreon from the website. You can donate as often as you like, as much as you like. You can become part of the Golden Circle here at the Span Report Podcast Network. Those people are the ones who allow for us to continue to do this show here live on Crowdcast. Now, if only Crowdcast will help hold up their end of the bargain and let us post the shit on the website. Right? But yeah, man, we really do appreciate everybody who donates monetarily that way. It really does help us keep this thing going, because this shit is not free, y'all. It really ain't. Is that it? I think that's it. I think I covered everything. I think I got the business out of the way. Yeah, I think that's everything. So yeah, that's what's going on, man. Now, of course, I got a couple random thoughts, man. It's not a whole lot, but I've been thinking about some shit, man. The last couple weeks, man. I don't know what's going on. I think your man's been washed, bro. I think your man's been is washed. I for the last couple weeks, man, I've been hold on, my damn headphone wires getting all caught up here. But yeah, the last couple weeks, man, your man's been tired, like on the weekends, man. On the weekends, like I remember there was a time when I would be up on the weekends, man. I would be up all hours of the night. You know what I'm saying? Ain't got shit to do. Just up. You know what I'm saying? Because you know why? Because I ain't got nowhere to be in the morning. That's how I roll, man. Like, ever since I was a kid. Like, when I was a kid, my mom used to let us stay up on, like, Friday and Saturday nights and shit. Because, you know, like, the Three Stooges would come on. That's, like, how I got this, you know, like, how I found shit funny. You know what I'm saying? Stay up to, like, 2 o'clock in the morning watching the Three Stooges and shit like that. And, like, that's been like a habit of mine since I was a kid, like to be up on the weekends, eating pizza Friday night, watching the Three Stooges. Me and my cousin are playing Monopoly till 5 o'clock in the morning, that kind of shit. And even as an adult, like I'd be up for no fucking reason, just up because I can be, because I don't have anywhere to be in the morning. Right. But the last couple of weeks, man, your man Span been like in the bed early, like in the bed, like at around the times that I used to tease my grandma about being in the bed. I remember when I was a young cat, and like I remember, like I might have been like 16, 17 years old. And my grandmother used to do this thing where like Granny would be in the bed at like 7 o'clock in the evening. She'd be laying there. She wasn't necessarily asleep, but Granny being there like 7 o'clock in the evening, she got a nightgown on, and she might sit there. She wait for the 9 o'clock news or something like that to come on, and she go on to, you know, like she go on to sleep. And I'm like, Granny, what, you know, you ain't got nowhere to be, you know, why are you in the bed so early? Not knowing it, like, and that was the thing. Granny would be up at like 5 in the morning too, right? So fast forward to 39-year-old Span, and it's a Friday night. 2 weeks ago, it's Friday night, and your man Span was knocked the fuck out on his couch. Called himself watching TV. Oh, shit. Let me try that again, because the shit wasn't plugged in. There we go. So, yeah, man, I was like in the bed, 8 o'clock, Friday night, right? So, I kind of like pushed that off as kind of a one-off, man. Because, you know, like, hey, you know, I've been working, you know, sometimes, you know, work kind of catches up with you, whatever, you know, it's a physical job, you know, sometimes it could be a bit physically and mentally demanding. So, yeah, you know, it's just a one-off, you know, I can't be all the way washed. I mean, yeah, it's 8 o'clock and you nigga like in the bed, but still, you know, it's kind of a thing. But then last night happened, right? Come home, me and the wife, you know, we were about to watch Bombshell. Yeah, we were trying to watch Bombshell last night, that movie about Megyn Kelly and Fox News and shit. And I'll be damned if the same shit wasn't happening to me last night. I was in the bed at like 10 o'clock on a Friday night. Your man Span washed, man. I think that... I got to get it back, though. I got to get myself back in game shape. You know, and when I say game shape, I'm talking about like New Orleans game shape, like being able to kick it and like, you know, I got to train, man. I got to get it back. I got to get back into it, man. I got to get back to it. I don't know, man. I don't know if it is it because I gave up the Popeyes. It might be because I gave up the Popeyes. I don't know. I'm just trying to figure it out, man. Your man Span washed at 39. I can't believe it. I'll be 40 this year. It's crazy. Another thing I was kind of thinking about. So, y'all know I'm a tech nerd, right? I especially like when it comes to like cell phones, video games, shit like that. I'm one of those folks who like when it comes to bleeding edge shit, if I can be on some bleeding edge shit, then damn it, I'm gonna be on the bleeding edge. And so I got the Galaxy S20 Ultra phone. And at first I was thinking about, nah, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to get that one. That's a little out there, you know, it's price wise. I was like, I don't know if I could justify that one. They want too much for it. And then I found out that if I traded in one of my phones, that I can get $600 off the cost of that bitch. Right. So I'm like, now we talking, you know what I'm saying? Cause I couldn't see spending $1,600 on this boy. Right. So, I got to trade in the Pixel phone. But one of the things, man, like, and I know a lot of folks, when I said I was getting it or that I had it, they were asking for reviews and stuff. Now, I haven't done a review for a phone in a long time, so we may do that something separately. I might not do that here on the show. But I'm a very particular kind of like cell phone consumer. I'm very picky. I'm very picky. Like, the people at the T-Mobile store be hating to see me coming. Like, real talk, because I got so many, like, I already kind of know what I'm talking about when I get in there, and like some of the questions they don't really have answers for, so they kind of hate that. And then, you know, when there's other things going on with my account that ain't right, you know, and I'm talking about, hey man, this is not supposed to be this way because of this and this, they kind of hate that too. But so I got this phone. And as much as like it's on some bleeding edge, like throw everything that you thought you wanted in the phone in this phone, there's some minor annoyances that got me I was the first time in a long time being kind of underwhelmed with a phone. Like, yeah. And like I said, it's mostly just me. I'm pretty sure that like for the vast majority of folks who will buy this phone, they will be more than happy. You know what I'm saying? But like, I'm a very particular kind of like consumer, man. And like the way to like navigate through the phone, I set my phones up the exact same way. No matter what kind of phone I got, they all set up the same. So I had the exact same experience no matter what kind of hardware I'm using. And this shit right here, man. But this is what I get for being on like the bleeding edge and like wanting to have like the top shit, right? This is my fault. This is all my fault. But you know, I guess it just kind of comes with the territory. But those are my random thoughts, man. Those are my random thoughts. Let's get into some. We got some listener feedback. So let me read our email here. We got this email. This comes from Andre. Andre writes in to say, what's up, Mr. Span? First off, I'm a fan of the podcast and enjoy all of the episodes, including Beer and Chicken and Baywatch. The latest episode, number 284 with Stephanie and Cook, had me cracking the fuck up. Man, listen, we had a ball on that one. Shout out to Cook. Shout out to Stephanie, man. And you know, like I said, when we doing special Hotep, man, we really can't really have special Hotep without Cook. It's kind of a thing now. And Stephanie, man, like just coming through. I can't tell y'all, man, how much fun we did. You know, we had doing that episode last week. I was dying over here, man. I ain't laughed like that in quite a while on the show, man. So we definitely had a good time. For those of you who haven't listened yet, go listen to episode 284. It's hilarious. It says the eulogy you delivered for the What About Harvey Weinstein was hilarious. Keep up the great work, brother. Peace. And thank you, Dre. Thank you. Thank you so much for your feedback, man. And yeah, you know, and I appreciate you heeding the call, brother. I appreciate you heeding the call, because last week we was talking about, you know, I keep getting these emails from this Shaka 1914 cat. And when it comes to like, you know, the things that you like, real talk, you need to go tell these people that are creating these things, these podcasts, these YouTube videos, these radio shows, whatever it is that you're listening to. If you like that, let them folks know that you like that, because I'm telling y'all, the people who don't fuck with that shit, it's almost as if it's their job to let you know that they don't fuck with your shit. But for the people who really do fuck with your shit, you know, sometimes, you know, we just don't, you know, we just like it, and we assume that like somebody else gonna sell them how much they like it, right? Nah, man, you can't make that assumption. Go ahead, let them people know, get them the roses while they here, right? Because then when they gone, you be like, damn, man, I really did fuck with that. And now it's gone, and they go like, well, shit, I wish you'd have told me. You know what I'm saying? So yeah, man, I appreciate you, Dre, for dropping the email, brother. And for real, those 5-star reviews, we want those too. We want those too. Real talk. But it is time for us to get into the news. Oh, snap. Not only that, that's not the only way to get listener feedback. The other way to get listener feedback is to actually listen to the show. So before we get into the news, let me shout out the top 5 cities for 2020, because like this is March 2020. We kind of like already like about to be 25% through the year. Let me shout out the top 5 cities that are fucking with the Spare and Poor podcast right now. So the 5th city on this list that fuck with the Spare and Poor podcast is none other than the hometown right now, Detroit, Michigan, is pulling in that 5th spot, man. Shout out to D-Town. Shout out to Detroit. Shout out to the Motor City. You know, I appreciate you. I appreciate y'all fucking with your boy. Right now, Detroit sitting at number 5, the number 4 town on the Spare and Poor podcast for the first quarter of this year. Number 4 right now is my hometown, where I was born. Chi-Town, stand up. We some proud motherfuckers, man. For real, for real. Chi-Town sitting in the number 4 right now. Now, y'all know we all need a number 1 spot. Ain't no way in hell Chicago and Detroit should be 4th and 5th on this list. I'm letting y'all know right now, ain't no way in hell that's supposed to be a thing. But yo, man, real talk, shout out. I appreciate y'all listening to the show, man. Chi-Town in number 4. And number 3, we got Washington, D.C., man. Real talk, appreciate D.C., man. Been to D.C. one time, man. Plan on going back. Got family in the area. Enjoyed my time there, man. It's a spot in D.C., man. I'm going to tell y'all. When I was in D.C. for NegroCon, I kept going back to Old Engine 12, this bar in D.C. It was right by the Airbnb I was staying in. And let me tell y'all, they got some jerk wings in there. Your boy couldn't stop going to get them wings, man. Couldn't stop doing it. Magnifique, man. I'm not like a real big bone on wing guy. You know what I'm saying? But Nick, I couldn't stop. Like, I kept going back, man. I had been. And then on top of that, right, outside of my wife's cooking, I ain't had no good jerk wings, man, since that place. Like, since I came from, like, I'm telling y'all, man, DC, I fuck with y'all. But I also fuck with Old Engine 12, man. Real talk. Shout out to them wings. But I appreciate y'all listening, man. Real talk. Also, number 2 on this list is New York City. Nah, I appreciate New York City for fucking with your boy, man. Now, I'm going to tell y'all this right now. I mean, although I appreciate y'all listening to your man Span, and the listenership is appreciated. Sometimes we go into our little back and forth, you know, between Chicago being second city and everything. You know, we have our pizza wars and whatnot. Chi-Town, stand up. You know, we got the best pizza. Y'all calling our shit casserole. But I'm going to tell y'all that all that, we going to lay that to the side, man. I appreciate y'all fucking with your boy. Give me these listens, man. Real talk. Y'all coming through in a big way. Number 2 on the Spare and Poor podcast listenership for the first quarter of 2020, right? And number 1 town listening to the Spare and Poor right now, it's coming from the East Coast still, and that's Philadelphia, PA. Shout out to Philly, man. Never been to Philly, but you know what? Y'all some thorough motherfuckers, man. Real talk, because you fuck with me. You know what I'm saying? No, real talk, man. I really do appreciate everybody from Philadelphia who's tuning in on a weekly basis, making it happen. Y'all showing up and showing out here on these listenership numbers, man. So I really do appreciate Philly for coming through and standing up, man. Number 1 on the first quarter for 2020, Philadelphia, PA, stand up, as y'all are the number 1 city that listen to and fuck with the Spare Report podcast, man. Real talk. But now it is time for us to get into the news. right, our first story here in the news for the Span Report podcast, episode 285. It's coming out of Nashville, man. Nashville, Tennessee suffered through tornadoes ravaging through the city. We're going to read the story here. This comes out of WSMV.com. It says that Tuesday morning's tornado that touched down near Tennessee State University, which also happens to be my alma mater, has caused more than $20 million in damage to the campus, according to estimations from university officials. The tornado, which struck Nashville after midnight, caused extensive damage to TSU's agricultural farm. Three out of our four buildings were totally destroyed, according to a statement from the university. Two calves from the farm died in the storm. Several goats were injured. Thankfully, no students or university staff were injured in the storm. Students are currently on break. According to a news release from TSU, lead goat researcher Dr. Richard Browning says the department's top priority is making sure that the livestock are okay. Right now, we're trying to make sure that the animals are sheltered, secure fence-wise, and that they have water and feed, Dr. Browning said in a news release. So, I know they talked a lot about like the animals and the agricultural buildings being destroyed and everything, but I'm gonna tell y'all something, man. As a Tennessee State University alumni, I've been hearing not great things about the facilities at the state at the school recently. Been hearing about them not having power at the school. Been hearing about the kids not having the proper showering at the school. They had to bring them portable showers and mobile showers and things like that. It's been a lot of things going on at Tennessee State University over the course of the last 6 months or so. The news just hasn't really been good, man. And so, to hear this story and have this story kind of come up, as much as you love, I got love for Nashville overall, but I'm gonna tell y'all right now, for me, and I'm, for me, the reason why I do have love for Nashville is because of the time that I spent at Tennessee State University. And to see the school going through so much right now, it kind of is fucking with you, it's fucking with me, right? And so, one of the things that I wanted to do with the show is for any of you guys who are in a position to help, who are in a position to give in a monetary way, who are in a position to give in a supply way, to give you guys some information as to how you can do that. So as a matter of fact, let me pull this up because I do have the University of Memphis is helping with giving money helping with giving money to the University of Tennessee State University. And I thought I had this pulled up. So let me do this here because I know I have the link on the website. There we go. So this is the Tennessee State University Tornado Relief Fund. This is actually from the University of Memphis. The link will be in the show notes. You can click on that link in order to give monetarily to help Tennessee State University rebuild and restore some of the facilities that are going on in the school. It's an HBCU, y'all. So off top, we're already kind of behind the eight ball being an HBCU, not having the level of alumni giving back in the ways in which we should. And certainly I'm going to be giving in as much as I can, as much as I can afford to help with the restoration efforts of Tennessee State University, man. Because like I said, it's just real big, that's where I went to school, man. So this shit kind of hurts. One of my partners, man, as a matter of fact, one of the guys I went to Tennessee State with, Al Rich over at Cool Springs Toyota in Nashville or in the Nashville area, has been doing some really good work as far as getting supplies to those around the Nashville area, providing supplies and support to a lot of the people in the Nashville area and the surrounding Nashville area who was suffering from these tornado devastations and everything. The link to him, because he's also trying to get more supplies to help more people. There's a link also for Al Rich, who's a friend of mine who also went to Tennessee State University. We met down there. He's also from Detroit. So shout out to Al. He's doing a lot of work on the ground, trying to get people the assistance that they need in Nashville. So shout out to him. But real talk, man, help those people out in Nashville, man. If we can do a little bit, man, every little bit helps. Is what I'm saying, right? Every little bit helps. And again, it's kind of personal to your boy, because my school was fucked up during those tornadoes, man. So I really do appreciate anybody who can give in that way towards helping Nashville, and not only just Nashville, but Tennessee State, you know, Tennessee State University in particular, because like I said, there's a lot of things happening there. And I feel sorry for those kids who are going to that school right now, having to deal with a lot of the issues that they're dealing with. So outside of the tornado and like them not having power and them having to shower outside and everything, man, just like whatever you can give. Trust and believe. Like I made sure that we have some trusted links in the show notes so that you guys can contribute to help in the rebuilding effort for Tennessee State University and in Nashville and as a whole. So yeah, man, that's in the news. Now, another story that is in the news is yo, man, we had some elections. We had some elections this week, man. Super Tuesday then came and went. And yo, man, right now, look like Joe Biden, the McCain the comeback kid. Yeah, man. So Super Tuesday happened, and this was after the primary elections in South Carolina, where Joe Biden ran up the numbers. Excuse me, won big in South Carolina. And yo, man, Joe Biden right now has a lot of momentum. They call him the shit Joe Mentum. You know, that's kind of corny, but you know, that's what they do. You know, that's what they do. But yo, Joe Biden is leading in the delegate count. Joe Biden is leading in the popular vote right now. And it's weird how like the conversation started changing when, you know, before they were arguing in debates, like, yo, if Bernie Sanders was the person who had the lead in the delegate count and the you know, the votes, like, should he get the nomination? And Bernie was like, yeah, and everybody else is like, no. And now it's like kind of flipped in that he's not as adamant about that shit anymore. Because truthfully speaking, Bernie Sanders had the opposite position when he was coming up in the rear in 2016, right? But we got this story here. We're going to read this. This comes out of, where is it? I got too many damn tabs open. I got way too many tabs. Let me close some of these. All right. So we got this story here. This comes out of NPR.org. It says the Democratic presidential contest is now a two-man race. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders went into Super Tuesday, the front runner, but it was Joe Biden's night. The former vice president rode a surge of momentum out of his big win in South Carolina on Saturday and established himself squarely as a principal alternative to Sanders. Biden won a majority of states, including Texas, Tuesday night. Sanders is projected to win California, but the vote still being counted there is unclear which candidate will emerge with a delegate lead. That sets up what looks like to be a sharp fight over the next 2 months between candidates with very different ideologies. Sanders paints in bold colors and wants radical change. Biden believes in progress accomplished by working with Washington's competing interests. We are not only taking on the corporate establishment, we're taking on the political establishment, Sanders said before rattling off a list of differences with Biden. Later, an ebullient Biden swatted at Sanders. People are talking about a revolution, he said. We started a movement. Here are five takeaways on why Biden did so well on Super Tuesday and where the race stands now. Now, we're not going to read theirs because we got our own. Right? We got our own, right? So I named this particular episode How Not to Lose for a reason. Because at this point, I kind of feel like Bernie Sanders, this was his nomination to lose, much like it was Hillary Clinton's nomination to lose in 2016. Bernie Sanders came into this particular situation, this particular election, as the clear front runner. He's been damn near running for president 5 years now. Ever since 2016, he's been like, yo, we know Bernie Sanders was going to get back into it. I had inklings that Joe Biden would jump into it like right after the 2016 elections. But MSNBC was doing profiles on Joe Biden and like his life and political works and all this other shit. Like right after like 2016, like, oh, yeah, he's definitely going to run. Right. And he also felt like he probably should have ran in 2016. But one of the reasons why I think it's important to tell like Bernie Sanders supporters, especially like Bernie Sanders supporters who are listening to me, because y'all know I've been very critical of Bernie Sanders. But also like for those of you who just don't understand like what's happening right now, like I could give some clarity to some of this shit. Right. So Bernie Sanders, I remember in 2016, Bernie Sanders, he was running he was running competitively, and many people did not believe that, you know, they were kind of shocked at the fact that Bernie Sanders was running competitively with Hillary Clinton for as long as he was during the 2016 primary, right? I remember in 2016, at the beginning of that start of that process, not even knowing who the fuck Bernie Sanders was. Real talk. And I'm someone who I've been paying attention to politics quite a bit, but hadn't really heard of Bernie Sanders, because I'm gonna be honest with y'all, Bernie Sanders' name didn't just jump out there like that. He wasn't like he had a whole lot of like signature legislation that he could put his name on and could point to and say, this is my shit, and the reason why y'all have this is because of me. Like, there wasn't anything like that when it came to Bernie Sanders. And even like in to a large degree, a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters would point to certain legislation as if that's Joe Biden's signature, right? Like, yo, Joe Biden authored the crime bill, you know, Joe Biden tried to cut Social Security, Joe Biden, like, they can point to certain things. And like, truthfully speaking, like, yeah, even if you said that, like, Joe Biden authored the crime bill, and the crime bill that Bernie Sanders voted for, that's something that you would call a signature piece of legislation. Like, Bernie Sanders has been in Congress for 30 years, and we don't have that for him, right? Now, the other part about this is that Bernie Sanders has been, you know, one of the biggest things that Bernie Sanders supporters like to say is that, like, yo, man, Bernie's been on the same shit for the better part of like 40, 50 years. He's been saying the same thing, man. Like, we know that, you know, he really believes in these things. And that, I don't think anyone's ever really questioned whether or not Bernie Sanders believes in the shit that he says and whether or not Bernie Sanders is consistent in the things that he says. I think for the most part, people are concerned about Bernie Sanders' effectiveness in actually getting those things to happen, being that he's been in Congress for the better part of 30 years. The other part about this is the attacks that Bernie Sanders supporters tend to lob towards the Democratic quote unquote establishment. All right. Now, one of the things about the establishment is that it's weird, it's really weird hearing the establishment coming from someone who's been a part of the process for 30 years. Like, he gets away with not being a part of the establishment, although he's been a part of the establishment for 30 years, kind of gets away with a lot. He doesn't get hit with the same level of vitriol that Hillary Clinton got or that Joe Biden is getting now for their support of the crime bill or their authorship of the crime bill. Nevertheless, he did support it enough to vote for it, and, you know, there's that mitigating circumstance. Well, you know, it was for, you know, the Violence Against Women Act, defensive against, I forget what the hell they call it. But the point that I'm making here is, like, yeah, the rhetoric sometimes, although it's passionate, although it's consistent, I think is short on results, right? And so when Bernie Sanders gets on a stage and tells you, we're going to do this through executive action, or we're going to do this through, like, we're going to cancel everyone's student loan debt. We're going to give everyone Medicare for all. We're going to, those are just two major like, policy initiatives, right? Just go off of those two. Free college, we're going to eliminate student debt, and we're going to give everyone Medicare for all. And when you ask them, how are you going to do that? Not a lot of specifics are given towards how you're going to do that, especially considering the current makeup of how Congress is now, especially in the Senate, where Mitch McConnell is blocking every fucking thing, right? So how do you manage that? How do you get this legislation passed when you have an obstructionist Congress, especially in the Senate, who's dead set on giving you anything that you are promising the people whom are voting for you? So how do you do that? How do you do that? And so I think the one of the biggest things for Bernie Sanders supporters, especially younger Bernie Sanders supporters, to understand is, like, yo, a lot of the things that Bernie Sanders is promising, he may not necessarily be able to deliver on, right? Now, that's with every politician. Politicians promise you some big shit, and maybe they'll get something a little bit smaller down the line, and you'll be like, well, okay, and the ball moves incrementally. Now, I know a lot of folks are like, yo, shit's fucked up, and, you know, we need some radical change in order to right this ship, right? And truthfully speaking, when you start talking about radical change, most people ain't really ready for that. Like, let's just keep it a buck. Even the people who say that they are, 9 times out of 10, they not. So when it comes to Bernie Sanders supporters are passionate. Bernie Sanders supporters are like fired up, and to a large degree, as young people, kind of fed up with the process, because for like some of them, like they've had like 8 years of Barack Obama. That's a good portion of their life, right? And then like the very first time they get a chance to vote, you know, they their choice is Bernie Sanders or Hillary Clinton, and they feel like, you know, Hillary Clinton and the DNC stole a nomination from Bernie Sanders. Now, here's the other part. Here's the other part about that. I'm gonna need y'all to come off of this. Bernie Sanders was robbed of the DNC nomination in 2016. And one of the reasons I'm gonna need y'all to come off of that is because, for one, the man lost squarely in the votes. Like, there was no way in hell he was going to be Hillary Clinton, with the vote totals being as desperate or as far as they were from one another. I think she beat him by almost 4 million votes. She beat him in the primary more than she beat Donald Trump in the general election, as far as the popular vote was concerned. And so, although y'all would talk about the super delegates and everything else, even if they didn't have super delegates, she still would have had more delegates and more than enough to win the nomination in 2016. Okay, so there's this antagonism towards the Democratic National Committee, or the Democratic Party in particular. There's an antagonism that a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters have towards the DNC. Now, if you were going to run as an independent, I get having that antagonism. You know what I'm saying? Like, we not gonna fuck with y'all. Y'all shit's corrupt or whatever. We don't like the way that y'all run shit over there. We not gonna do that. We got enough money over here. We gonna fund him independently. He's got a lot of small dollar donations. We are able to prop up this campaign because he continues to fund. He can fundraise, right? He can continue to get money. But if you're gonna come and be a part of someone else's process, you can't then alienate those people and point fingers at them and say that they're corrupt and that they can't, that the process is rigged against you, because again, you are not a part of their party. You're just using their apparatus in order to help you politically. You can't come into their party and then act surprised when they're not as welcoming, right? They're not welcoming. They're like, hey man, who the fuck is you? Like, can you imagine coming to somebody's house and then putting your feet up on their table? That's kind of how y'all acting right now. And then like, When the host is like, hey man, get your motherfucking feet off my table, you looking at them like, oh, whoa, 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 that's not very hospitable. Like, no, nigga, you disrespecting my house. Right? You're disrespecting my house right now. Get your feet off my table. And that's kind of how it looks to a lot of Democrats when it comes to Bernie Sanders and Bernie Sanders supporters. Y'all want things to run a certain way, but this ain't your shit. And so you feel like you're going, okay, so we're going to come in, we're going to take over y'all shit. Okay, then now you're running up against opposition within the party, and these are the people who you're going to need in order to get you to the place you want to go. And so by antagonizing those folks, by going after, you know, other candidate supporters, like calling Pete Buttigieg a rat and then asking for his endorsement the minute that Pete Buttigieg gets out of the race, or calling Elizabeth Warren a snake after she came out and said that, like, yo, Bernie Sanders once told me that in a conversation that he didn't think a woman could be president of the United States, calling her a snake and a liar because she came out and said it publicly. And then Elizabeth Warren had to say, like, at the end of that debate, like, I believe you just called me a liar on national television. And then everyone's on Twitter. They're putting snake emojis up. You know, they're calling her a liar and everything. But the minute she gets out of the race, because Elizabeth Warren aligns politically with Bernie Sanders, suddenly y'all are expecting that she's going to fall in line and give up an endorsement for Bernie Sanders. Never mind the treatment that she got. Never mind the treatment that her supporters got. Y'all think that this is going to fall in line, and it doesn't work that way. So as I kind of watch this process play out, real talk, as I'm talking to a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters, and like I've been kind of going back and forth with a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters and whatnot, these campaigns are now like texting people and whatever else. I've got text messages from the Warren campaign, from the Bloomberg campaign, from the I've been text messaging back and forth with the Bernie Sanders campaign today. But one of the things about it is that Ah, shit, I lost my goddamn train of thought. Ain't that a bitch? Excuse me, hold on a second. All right. Now, one of the things about the Bernie Sanders campaign is, yo, man, y'all gotta be held accountable for the shit that y'all doing on social media, in the media, being honest about it. The Young Turks was talking about Bernie Burrows not even being a thing, and nobody can be able, like, nobody being able to point to any examples of Bernie Bros or being, or anybody being Bernie Sanders supporters being antagonistic towards anyone. It's like, okay, so now y'all gaslighting everybody, right? And when I criticize the Bernie Sanders campaign, truthfully speaking, I'm trying to talk to y'all like, yo, this is y'all getting in your own way, right? You're kind of getting in your own way. Like, when we talk about whether or not you want Joe Biden or Bernie Sanders, truthfully speaking, I probably align more with Bernie Sanders than I do Joe Biden. Like, because, you know, Joe Biden is a moderate candidate. Joe Biden is a safe candidate only because Joe Biden is a he's the candidate that black folks, and we're going to talk about black folks, but he's the candidate that black folks feel like white people are comfortable enough to vote for. Right. And this is why some of the critiques of the black voter after what happened on Super Tuesday were so unfair, because there's a lot of folks on the liberal side, progressive supposedly, who also harbor some pretty racist views when it comes to black people. So before Super Tuesday, like, you know, everybody pretty much thought that Bernie Sanders had this in the bag. And, you know, Joe Biden's campaign was pretty much on life support, didn't have any money, didn't have any outreach. He wasn't putting out any ads or anything. And then, boom, he got an endorsement from Jim Clyburn of South Carolina, a congressman from South Carolina. And boom, he won by almost 40 fucking points in South Carolina and became the front runner on the popular vote side. Right. And then all through the South on Super Tuesday, Joe Biden was picking up wins, and mostly on the back of black voters. Right. Now, one of the biggest critiques that I had of Bernie Sanders was that Bernie Sanders in the 2016 primary ignored a lot of black people, ignored the black vote in the South. Right. And the calculus behind that was, like, yo, these southern states aren't going to be viable for us as Democrats in the general election. So I'm not going to waste my time down there. I'm not going to spend as much money down there. I'm not going to campaign down there because they're not going to vote for us come November. And I've heard a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters say the exact same thing. Like, those states aren't going to matter in the general. But you know what? You got to get there first. And by ignoring those states and by dismissing those voters, you run yourself the risk of coming up in a delegate deficit, right? Sort of like what happened in 2016. And we're seeing Bernie Sanders do that again, right? We're seeing him do that again. Bernie Sanders and his supporters have been very dismissive of the voters in the South, especially black voters in the South. Bernie Sanders is in Michigan right now as if Mississippi doesn't have a primary happening this week, right? Bernie Sanders is in Michigan talking to Fox News as if Mississippi voters don't have a primary this week, right? And so I've been watching folks on the Bernie Sanders side of this talk about black voters not having standards. I was in a back and forth with a guy on Twitter the other day. Black voters not having standards. Black voters voting for the lesser of two evils. Black voters not having any courage. Black voters being low information voters. Now, I'm going to tell y'all something, right? I get on Republicans quite a bit, especially like black Republicans, because black Republicans have this thing where they talk about black Democratic voters as if black Democratic voters don't know what they want, two, are voting against their own interests, and three, aren't politically smart or savvy. And then they talk about them being on the Democratic plantation. Hashtag walk away. Hashtag I'm a black Republican. I got off that Democratic plantation. Right. It's very dismissive. It's very racist. And a lot of times they give room for a lot of racist white people to come out there and call you a Democrat. You're a slave to the Democrats on their plantation and everything else. And for a lot of people on the left who are Bernie Sanders supporters, who disagree with the fact that those voters in the South voted for Joe Biden, a lot of y'all came out with that low information voter shit. And it's not much different than these black Republicans who are coming out saying, hey, they own the black plant. They own the Democratic plantation. They don't know what they want. They don't have any courage. They don't have any standards. A lot of y'all are dismissing that. And that's one of the critiques that I have about Bernie Sanders and his supporters. Because truthfully speaking, as much as I criticize Bernie Sanders, it's like, yo, if y'all want to win, y'all can't be doing this shit. This ain't it. This ain't how you get these people behind you to get the momentum that you're going to need to get the nomination. This ain't it. And you would think after 5 years of running, you would think after this being the second time go around, that, hey, man, Bernie Sanders would have learned from that. His people would have talked to him. They would learn, like, hey, man, okay, so we need to invest in, like, you know, talking to our people in these HBCUs. We need to make sure that we ingratiate ourselves, develop some relationships with these people, because most of this is like, yo, man, we know Joe Biden. We don't really know Bernie Sanders. Like I said, when I first started this, I didn't know who the fuck Bernie Sanders was in 2016 until he started running for president. A lot of people did not know who Bernie Sanders was. And even now, when you start asking Bernie Sanders to talk about racial issues, to some degree, he still pivots to a class thing. I saw Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez on The Breakfast Club talking about, race and class as if they aren't two separate things. She's a big Bernie surrogate, as if those two things aren't two separate. I can make $100,000 a year and still get bothered by the police. Like, the police ain't gonna just stop fucking with me because, like, oh, that nigga look like he got some money. Right? That's not, like, so trying to conflate those two things is something that they have an issue with. They continue to do it. This is a mistake they continue to keep making. And so for, like going forward, here's a couple things that I need you Bernie Sanders supporters to understand. Being on Twitter, being on Facebook, talking shit to people who don't necessarily agree with you, or better yet, talking shit to people who by and large do agree with you. Right? Because a lot of this is like y'all talking to people who would vote for Bernie Sanders if he was the guy. But y'all kind of like y'all go in to a point where like they like, man, out of spite for y'all, they be like, man, well, fuck him. Right? That's kind of like a lot of people just like, well, shit, is this how y'all get people to like join the team? Like, it's get down or lay down? Because like, real talk, I ain't about that laying down shit. Right? So I'm going to need y'all to kind of come down on that rhetoric, man. Like this idea that these people don't know what they want. I'm going to tell y'all something, man. Older black voters done seen some shit. As much as y'all think y'all know everything, man, I was thinking about this week, man. And it's part of the reason, like, Bernie Sanders really ain't my favorite guy right now, because a lot of his supporters have turned me into that uncle that's, like, wagging his finger and like at the youth and shit. I done turned into that guy because it's like, hey, like, y'all out here acting like y'all know every fucking thing, man. A lot of times, like, when, like, people bring up that 1994 crime bill, one of the first things I kind of want to ask them, like, hey, man, when was you born? You know what I'm saying? Was you even here in 94 to even know what the fuck was going on that precipitated why the 1994 crime bill was considered something that was necessary and that it had support within the Congressional Black Caucus and everything else? Like, were you even here for that? Because if you were here for that, then you would understand how that came to be, as opposed to just pulling that out because you've seen it on Twitter and they keep, you know, the cycle continues. The cycle continues. I saw a young lady on Facebook, I'm sorry, on YouTube today. She said, I'll be damned if I get behind Joe Biden. And she talked about Joe Biden's previous opposition to gay marriage. Right. And, you know, he came around years later and she said, well, you know, that just says to me that he will go wherever the political winds blow. It's like, yo, there's a whole lot of people who after some years and some time figured out that, like, hey, some of these things I might have been like, I thought I had it like pegged. I was wrong on that. And I changed my mind about it. And over time, if you're here long enough, you get a chance to evolve on a lot of different issues. I'm a person who've done that, where I've had an opportunity. I've been lucky enough to have an opportunity to evolve on a lot of different issues, man. And so when you're young, you're like, well, it's not as you can't really put that together like that, because it's like A or B and that's it. Like, you just looking at, okay, so here's a timeline. In 96, you said this. And in 2007, you said that. And it's like, yeah, that's like a decade. A lot can go on in a decade. Some perspectives can change within 10 years. I'm not the same dude at 39 that I was at 29. We talked about, like, that's part of the, like, the intro to the show, right? Growth. We want people to grow. Not about the political winds blowing. It's like, hey man, I was on some dumb shit. I figured it out. I'm not on that dumb shit no more. But going forward, I need y'all to do this. Get off of Twitter. Get off of Facebook. Stop arguing with these people about Bernie Sanders and actually vote for Bernie Sanders. Right? Bernie Sanders, as a matter of fact, let me pull this article back up, because Bernie Sanders actually won the black youth vote, right? He won the black youth vote. Like, his numbers overwhelmingly, black youth voters are overwhelmingly supporting Bernie Sanders. But you know what? Black youth voters aren't taking their asses to the polls. Youth voters overall aren't going to the polls. So as much as you can be on Facebook and Twitter and being passionate about Bernie Sanders on Facebook and Twitter, yeah, you can pop all that shit you want to. But unless you get to the polls and put that work, those words to action, nobody's hearing you. So for all the smoke y'all get for the older black people, for the older black people who voted for Joe Biden and feel like, yo, the reason why I'm voting for Joe Biden is because I'm playing this long game. I know these white people are going to accept Joe Biden, and I'm willing to do anything to get Donald Trump's racist ass up out of there. Maybe if we can reset this, make these white people comfortable with this guy, then maybe we can get something later down the line, probably in the next 3 to 4 years. Maybe Joe Biden only does one term. And then if Joe Biden does one term, depending on who his vice president is, maybe it's Kamala Harris. Maybe it's Stacey Abrams. Maybe we get something more palatable to what we want and what we need, and somebody who's going to fight more for what we want. But we got to get these white people in line first. Right? But if you want the revolution that you guys are promoting and talking about on Twitter and on Instagram and on Facebook, damn it, it don't mean nothing if you don't go to the polls. It don't mean shit. So Bernie Sanders has to, one, stop dismissing Southern black voters. That's one. Bernie Sanders has to, two, cut down on the rhetoric, the antagonistic rhetoric towards the Democratic National Committee or the Democratic Party, considering he's using their political apparatus in order to try to get himself elevated to president. And three, y'all gotta vote. Like, as much as y'all, like, he's a viable candidate, like, he can't be president if y'all don't vote, right? So y'all know I'm a big proponent of voting. I got the link on for VoterPal on the website. On every episode going into November, that link will be in the show notes, so you can download that app, register to vote, register as many people as you need to go vote, to get people to go to the polls. But y'all need to do, these are the things that y'all need to do to not lose, right? These are the things y'all need to do to not lose. Y'all need to have little bit of perspective. You need to, like, kind of pump your brakes on some of the more antagonistic rhetoric. Y'all need to stop gaslighting people about Bernie Bros and whether or not they exist or not. Because it's a thing. It's been a thing for the better part of 5 years now. And the fact that y'all are still out here saying, well, you don't know if it's real Bernie Sanders supporters. You don't. It's all this online. Like, yo, I don't know if it's not real. I don't know if it's Russians or bots, but I also know they ain't all Russians or bots. Somebody is behind these accounts, and some of these are well-known Bernie Sanders surrogates. Some of them have private Twitter accounts that they were using to talk shit about other about other candidates and their surrogates and everything else. This has been documented, man. Stop gaslighting folks on whether or not those people, those Bernie bros or cis, like Bernie bros and women exist or not. Because you're going to need these people to advance your agenda. You can't burn bridges and then act surprised when the people who you just like pissed off and shitted on are not eager to come fuck with you. You can't do it. As a matter of fact, let's go back. Because like I said, I was talking about the youth vote. We get this story here from USAtoday.com. It says young voters cheer Bernie Sanders anti-establishment message. They turn out in throngs at his rallies and they form the core of his grassroots efforts and win the Democratic presidential nomination. But their fiery passion did not translate into the robust turnout that he needed on Super Tuesday to win a number of key states, notably in the South, where a strong showing by Joe Biden has made the nomination contest a two-person race, especially now that former New York Mayor Michael Bloomberg has dropped out of the race and endorsed Biden. Exit polls for several states Biden won, including Massachusetts, Texas, and several southern states that helped catapult the former vice president into front-runner status, found that while more young voters went to the polls this election cycle, they did not show up at the rate that they did in 2016. At a news conference Wednesday in Vermont, Sanders acknowledged the difficulty of convincing young voters to show up and vote. We have been successful, as I would hope, in bringing in young... Wait, have we been as successful as I would hope in bringing in young people in? And the answer is no. We're making some progress, but historically, everybody knows that young people do not vote in the kind of numbers that older people vote. I think that will change in the general election. But to be honest with you, we have not done as well in bringing young people into the process. It's not easy. I'm going to tell you right now, if you don't bring those voters in the primary process, ain't no reason for you to even talk about the general, because you're not going to get there. If y'all want Bernie Sanders to be the Democratic nominee for president, you need to get your ass up and go vote. And I say that as a critic of Bernie Sanders. Everything I've said has been like, yo, man, y'all pretty much repeating y'all can't get out of your own way. I've been saying this for the last few weeks now. So like when I say it, of course, you know, I mean, I guess it can come off as antagonistic and everything. But real talk is like, yo, this is what y'all kind of need to do to win. A lot of y'all are getting in your own way. And for the life of me, y'all can't, like, y'all not listening. Bernie Sanders isn't listening. And right now, Bernie Sanders is rocking out in second place, much the same way he was rocking out in second place in 2016. So if you want to win, stop ignoring Black Southern voters. Stop gaslighting people about the antagonistic attitude of Bernie bros online. Register to vote and go vote. And stop antagonizing the DNC. Or the Democratic establishment. Because you're going to have a hard time convincing a whole lot of older Black people that they are part of the establishment. I think a whole lot of Black people are a lot more politically savvy than a lot of y'all think y'all are. Because they done seen some shit. You ain't seen nothing. A lot of y'all ain't seen shit. Ain't been through a whole lot of shit. Like, that's the other thing about youth, too. You think you done been through some shit, don't know nothing about what your older uncles and aunts and grandmas and granddads done been through. They done seen some shit. And they've seen this process play out before. We've seen this movie before. This is kind of new to you. Right? So, yeah, man. That has been the news. But y'all know what time it is.
What in blue blazes is going on out here?
Did this nigga just say blue blazes?
All right, our first story here in blue blazes is a crazy one indeed. So y'all know that the young lady who used to date R. Kelly, Azriel Clary, she was her parents were featured on Surviving R. Kelly. They were trying to get Azriel from R. Kelly. And she also was like the very vocal one in the interview that they did with Gayle King. Azriel was the one who spoke the most and was the most indignant with Gayle King. Well, apparently she is, wait, this looks like one big ass link. Hold on a second. Let me see if I can open this original up. But apparently Azriel Clary is saying that, R. Kelly made her do something terribly disgusting. she said that he made her eat shit out of a cup and he recorded it.
God damn!
Yeah, man, we're going to read this story here. This comes out of the YBF.com. It says, a snippet from Azriel Clary's upcoming documentary, Precedence, has been released, and she makes some horrifying and disgusting allegations. Yes, more of them. About her ex, R. Kelly. She also shares audio of a jail call she had with the embattled singer, more inside. Says she's going to tell, Azriel Clary said that she's going to tell all, and she's doing just that. In an upcoming documentary titled Precedence, Azriel Clary, who used to live with R. Kelly and his girlfriends, is going to share everything she went through the 5 years she was with Kelly after meeting him at the age of 17. In a sneak peek clip, she's seen having a conversation on her cell phone with someone labeled as a federal agent where she makes shocking and horrifying claims. She said he made her defecate in a cup and then eat it, all while he recorded. Yes, he has a video of me. He made me do this video, actually, of me doing a number two in a cup and then eating it out of the cup, she said in the clip. This isn't the first time we've heard something similar about Kelly and feces. Switching gears, Azriel also shares audio of herself having a conversation with the I Believe I Can Fly singer behind bars. As you know, the Pied Piper is singer sitting in prison after racking up a slew of federal and state charges, which include child pornography, racketeering, violations of the Mann Act, obstruction of justice, and more. Azriel basically told him she's done with his ass. It's done. It's over. It's over. You may not even make it to trial. I'm so sorry for you. I'm sorry. I really did love you, and you lied to me, and you used me, and you played me, she said on the phone. I love you, Kelly responded. As you know, Azriel left Kelly's Trump Tower condo in Chicago back in January after brawling with his other live-in girlfriend, Joycelyn Savage. The sneak peek has been shared by E. Wait. Oh, so there's video. Hold on. I wish I'd known that at first. Let me see if I can pull this up so you guys can watch along with your boy. Let's do that there. All right. Here we go. Let's
see. Yes. He has a video of me, he made me do this video, actually, of me doing a number two in a cup and then eating it out of the cup. It's done. It's over. It's over. You may not even make it to trial. I'm so sorry for you. I'm sorry. I really did love you. And you lied to me, and you used me, and you played me.
Precedence.
Okay, so maybe I'll make this as a poll. Maybe I'll make this as the poll on the show tonight. You know, do y'all believe that? I mean, I'm sure, and I'm like the biggest fucking R. Kelly like skeptic and like critic and everything else. Like, I wonder how much of this is like, how much of this is like just, I hate that I'm even asking this, man, but like, how much of this is like, yo, just like an attempt to like kind of capitalize on everything that's going on with R. Kelly and the fervor around him and everything? Like, how much of that is this? That's crazy. Like, two girls, like, she did a number. That's nasty. That's nasty.
You shouldn't have been talking shit.
That's nasty. I don't really know what to make of that. Real talk. Like, as much as you want, like, these girls' growth and everything, like, you want them to heal from what happened to them and whatnot, like, I don't know why it is with this that, like, I'm just, like, kind of skeptical. I don't know what it is. I really don't. Maybe it's a sensational, like it being kind of sensationalized the way that this is. Like, it's been like, okay, so let me put this clip out to get hot on social media and it'll draw up attention for this documentary that I want to put. Like, it's just, I don't know, man. Something about this just seems fishy to me. And I don't know why, but something about this seems fishy to me, man. But yo, man, Azriel Clary says that R. Kelly made her eat shit, made her eat her own shit out of a cup. And I really don't have any reason to doubt that, like, considering that all of the things that we've heard about R. Kelly and the allegations that he's been accused of and the things that we know that he's been like known to do. I don't really have any reason to doubt it, but it's, I don't know, man. Something about this just don't seem right. Something about it just don't seem right to me. But yeah, man, that's in Blue Blazes. Another story here that's in Blue Blazes. This is actually like fucking justice right here. This is actually fucking justice. So hold on a second. We got this story here. This comes out of, where do we get this story here? This comes out of the New York Post, right? So there was a guy who decided he was gonna go hunting. Had a gun, had a firearm. You know, a lot of these dudes go out there, they go hunting, they fucking with Bambi. Bambi out there minding their own business, you know what I'm saying? It's like, hey, man, you know, I'm just out here frolicking in the grass, you know what I'm saying? Got my shorties out here with me, you know what I'm saying? We out here looking majestic and whatnot, you know, just being animals in the wild, you know what I'm saying? And here you go, some white man we ain't never seen coming over here starting some shit. And that's exactly what happened, right? But check this out. Bambi beat the shit out of this dude.
God damn!
Bambi got this dude's nose doing the goddamn gangsta lean, man. Real talk. She pretty much beat the... This dude's face had to be reconstructed. We gonna read this story here. Like I said, this comes out of the NewYorkPost.com. It says, this buck fought back. A behemoth deer charged a French hunter as he tried to shoot it, ripping open the guy's face and landing him in the hospital with 50 stitches, according to a report. It actually took half my face off, the hunter Vincent Salbion said. The 36-year-old had to be raced by helicopter to a team of surgeons after the 330-pound animal he was stalking in southwest France stormed him, according to the outlet. See, first of all, how close were you, right? How close were you you had the gun. Animal like probably should have been a fair distance away. You couldn't fire a shot. Did the gun like fucking like jam? Did you like not have it loaded? Did you not even cock the motherfucker? Like, how did it happen to where the deer had enough time to get up on you and beat the brakes off your ass? Like, for real, how did you fuck that up? It says the deer tore a chunk of skin off of Sabian's mug under his cheek and eye, causing him to feel drunk after the impact and amount of blood loss. He was so disoriented, he told pals that he wanted to keep hunting, but they forced him to stop while a firefighter friend tended to his wounds. He was later treated at Pellegrin Hospital in Bordeaux. So, wait. So it was a group of y'all. It was a group of y'all, and ain't none of y'all fire on the motherfucking deer, man. Y'all let the deer run up on your boy and beat his ass. Oh man. Oh shit. He was later treated at Pellegrin Hospital in Bordeaux, where he underwent emergency surgery, but the wild attack won't stop him from returning to the sport. I'm still crazy about hunting. I have nothing but respect for the game. Yeah, okay. Nothing but respect for the game. Here's an instance where the fucking deer stood his ground, right? I'm over here minding my business. And I got a gang of white dudes coming in my neighborhood, talking shit, got fire, like y'all got y'all guns or whatever. Y'all ain't got nothing for these hands, though. Y'all ain't got nothing for these hands. Or these paws or hooves or whatever the fuck the deer. Hold on, man. Let me see if I can pull this up. Y'all got to see this man's face. Let me pull this up for y'all, man, so y'all can see this dude's face. Because this man's face has been rearranged, my dude. Like, it ain't even funny, man. Like, well, it's funny, but y'all know what I'm talking about. Look at this man's face. Oh, let me pull this up, man. Hold on. Where is it? Come on. Look at this man's face. Look at this shit. Oh man, all I know is he should leave them deers alone, man. Stop what you're doing. Stay out of them just stay out of the area, man, for real, because that deer gonna walk up on you like,
I kill everybody up in this motherfucker.
Oh man, so yeah, man, dude got his face fucking rearranged by a deer. Deer stood his ground, man. It ain't no fun when the deer got the gun, and in this case, the hooves, because he beat the brakes off of this nigga. Rearranged his whole goddamn face, man, real talk. But that's in Blue Blazes. Now, another story here in Blue Blazes is, yo, man, let's do this here, because real talk, this is unfortunate. It really is. Yeah. Public Enemy. Revolutionary group, Public Enemy, is no more. They have gotten rid of, fired, well-known, legendary hype man of the group, Flavor Flav. And the reason why they did it is because Flavor Flav disagreed with them being involved in the rally with Bernie Sanders. We're going to read this story here. This comes out of RollingStone.com. It says, there's some updates to this. So let's see. Let me read this. It says, update number two, amidst an ongoing spat with Public Enemy over his dismissal from the storied hip-hop outfit after he declined to join them at a Bernie Sanders rally, Flavor Flav clarified his political stance in an interview with The Guardian. I don't have anything against Bernie, the hype man said. I think he's a good person and I wish him luck. I think they're all good people except Trump. Some people tried to say I did this because I'm a Trump supporter, and that's not true. Fuck Trump. Okay, because I did hear that. A lot of people were talking about that Flavor Flav was on some, like, you know, give Trump a chance shit and everything else. He's like, nah, man, fuck that nigga. So another update, it says Public Enemy clarified that the group did not part ways with Flavor Flav over his political views. Flavor Flav has been on suspension since 2016. When he was MIA from the Harry Belafonte benefit in Atlanta, Georgia, reads a joint statement signed by members Chuck D, DJ Lord, Jahi, James Bomb, and Pop Diesel. That was the last straw for the group. He said, previously missed numerous live gigs from Glastonbury to Canada, album recording sessions, and photo shoots. He's always chose to party over work. They continue. Public Enemy Radio toured Europe and co-headlined with the Wu-Tang Clan in May 2019 without Flavor. They have also done numerous benefit shows without Flavor. While Public Enemy Radio was moving forward, Flavor Flav was starring on the reality show Growing Up Hip Hop New York, where an episode featuring his children discussing an intervention and putting him in rehab. It's time to move on, and everyone wishes Flav well. Now, interestingly enough, listen, Public Enemy will never be seen the same again. You would have thought that Public Enemy would have been done with Flavor Flav after Flavor of Love. But no, they weren't. Public Enemy allowed Flavor Flav to act like no before for the better part of 20 years. It seems very fishy that Public Enemy would part ways with Flav at this juncture publicly over Bernie Sanders. Now, they would say that they didn't, but we all know it's true. Bernie Sanders is a cancer on friends, family, and loved ones. Now, let me stop. No, real talk, man. I hope that, like, they can find some sort of resolution to this. Like, because, like, real talk, who can identify Public Enemy without Flavor Flav? I think he's that integral to the group. Like, who goes to a Public Enemy concert and not expect Flav to, like, be a part of that? And I know, like, they say they've been doing recordings. They say they've been going out and doing shows without Flav. But I'm pretty sure that a lot of people who are looking at Public Enemy, going to Public Enemy shows, paying for Public Enemy tickets, are like, yo, where the fuck is Flav, man? And when they leave, are a little bit disappointed. You know, so for... you know, this, like, to kind of come to a head over a Bernie Sanders rally and Flavor Flav, like, yo, man, like, y'all kind of, like, using the, you know, the Public Enemy image for Bernie. Like, I'm not really with that, and I feel like I should have some say with that. And, like, I'm not real versed on all the inner workings of the group, but I'm just saying, man, when people think of Public Enemy, Flavor Flav is one of the first motherfucking things that come to their mind. And so for Public Enemy to have such a public spat with Flavor Flav over Bernie Sanders of all people, and you know, them having to explain that, like, yo, man, we got rid of Bernie, you know, because of all these other things. They're like, well, shit, y'all talking about fucking Growing Up Hip Hop New York. What about Flavor of Love? Like, that shit happened out in, like, the 1990s, early 2000s. We in 2020 now. So this has been a thing for a long time, but y'all didn't get rid of them then. Y'all got rid of them now, and it looks funny now. You know? So, yeah, man. Public Enemy and Flavor Flav are not, like, not together anymore. Like, damn. First the motherfucking Fat Boys, and now this, right? So, yeah, man. That has been Blue Blazers.
What in Blue Blazers is going on out here?
This nigga just say blue blazing.
But y'all know what time it is.
That I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that fight to me. And I gladly stand up next to you and defend her still today. Cause there ain't no doubt I love this land.
Right, that's another of that shit. It's Proud to Be an American time here at the Spare Report Podcast, man. And our first story here in Proud to Be an American is about Nathaniel Woods. Now, Nathaniel Woods was executed this week in Alabama. And, you know, one of the things that, like, kind of happened on social media this week was there was a lot of talk about Nathaniel Woods, the efforts to get his execution stay by the state, hoping that Governor Kay Ivey would stay his execution. Nathaniel Woods was accused and convicted of shooting and killing three police officers. We're going to read this story here. This comes out of ABC News. It says, while the family of Nathaniel Woods fumes over his execution and prepares for his funeral, the man who confessed to acting alone in the killing of three Alabama police officers that landed them both on death row is alive and may never be executed, according to his former appellate attorney. Now, this is the thing that pissed off the world. The fact that the man who admits to shooting and killing these police officers was not executed. And he also says that Nathaniel Woods didn't do anything that they are accusing him of. Nathaniel Woods was adamant about his innocence the entire time he was locked away. And yet and still, he was executed. Governor Kay Ivey refused to stay the execution. And yet we have the dude who is admitting to killing these officers, and he's still alive. And there's no plans to execute him whatsoever. We're going to continue to read the story. It says, as a wave of outrage swept the state and the nation over Woods' execution late Thursday, Alabama's death penalty laws are being scrutinized by civil rights leaders and labeled as unjust by Woods supporters, saying its criminal courts are unfair to minority defendants. But the former attorney for Kerry Spencer, a man convicted of gunning down three police officers in a Birmingham crack house in 2004, said he hopes the execution will put a final nail in the death penalty in Alabama and 28 other states where it still exists. If that can be a poster case for eliminating the death penalty, if that can't be a poster case for eliminating the death penalty, I don't know what will. Retired defense attorney Charles Flowers III told ABC News on Friday. Now, there is video to this, so let me pull this video up so that you guys can kind of watch along with me and check this out. Here we go.
When police arrived, that's what he said. Spencer even confessed to being the sole gunman who killed the officers. Ultimately, Woods was convicted on four capital murder charges. He tried appealing his conviction and argued that he had been given inadequate representation. His appeal was denied by both the Alabama Supreme Court and the Supreme Court of the United States. High-profile individuals, from the son of Martin Luther King Jr. to director Ava DuVernay to Kim Kardashian West, all tweeted against Woods' execution. But the governor of Alabama released a statement doubling down, saying, this is not a decision that I take lightly, but I firmly believe in the rule of law and that justice must be served. Joining me now to discuss the complexities of this case, as well as the role that the Supreme Court played, is criminal law professor Echo.
Okay, we're not going to listen to all of that. But interestingly enough, Governor Ivey doubled down on the decision to not stay the execution, despite the fact that Nathaniel Woods was adamant about his innocence. The person who actually killed the police officers was adamant about his innocence, and that person is still alive, probably won't be executed at all. But here's the other thing, right? So this is one of the reasons why, and the governor of Alabama, Kay Ivey, is a Republican. Governor Ivey, earlier this, in 2019, Governor Ivey was in the news because she signed legislation in that state that would render abortions illegal. So this story comes out of PBS, and this is from last year. It said Alabama's Republican governor signed the most stringent abortion legislation in the nation Wednesday, making performing an abortion a felony in nearly all cases. To the bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabamians' deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a sacred gift from God, Republican Governor Kay Ivey said in a statement. The bill's sponsors want to give conservatives on the U.S. Supreme Court a chance to gut abortion rights nationwide, but Democrats and abortion rights advocates criticize the bill as a slap in the face to women voters. It just completely disregards women and the value of women and their voice. We have once again silenced women on a very personal issue, says Senator Linda Coleman Madison, a Birmingham Democrat. Now, let's read this again. It says, to this bill's many supporters, this legislation stands as a powerful testament to Alabamians' deeply held belief that every life is precious and that every life is a sacred gift from God. You don't believe that shit. You don't believe that shit. If you believe that, then doubling down on killing Nathaniel Woods wouldn't have been something that you would have done, because you know what? You'd have believed that Nathaniel Woods' life was precious, right? That every life is precious, that every life is a sacred gift from God. This is what you say. And this is why, and I'm going to bring this back full circle when we start talking about that Bernie shit, and why Joe Biden seems like a valid choice between Donald Trump and Bernie Sanders and like the whole shit. When you have people dealing with that level of racism right there, and that they have that level of racism has backing from the federal government, and that they have backing by that federal government to institute laws, to pass laws, to appoint judges who will uphold these unconstitutional laws, who will get backing from the federal government to enforce these laws. When you're dealing with that level of hate and you think there's a chance that some of these motherfuckers that hate me don't hate this white man as much, I might want to look to him. Right? You could talk about people dealing in fear and voting in fear and all this other shit. Hey, man, they are living with this shit every day. A lot of us are talking about a lot of these things in the abstract. You got folks, you got black folks in the South living in red states, who have to deal with this shit on the daily, who have Republican governors and Republican legislatures that are actively seeking to, one, suppress their vote, and two, suppress their rights overall. They are like the front line of this shit. A lot of the things that we're talking about in some of the northern cities and some of our metropolitan areas like New York, like Chicago, LA, Seattle, we're not necessarily dealing with that level of discrimination and subjugation by the government that represents our state. And they're being buttressed by a hateful executive branch and half of the legislative branch, and to a large degree, the judicial branch, because of the federal judges that Donald Trump is being able to appoint at a record pace. So Governor Kay Ivey executes this man. We talk about criminal justice reform. This is one of the reasons why we should have it. Governor Kay Ivey wants to execute these people. A lot of these people who claim to be pro-life are not pro-life at all. They're just pro-birth. And when that baby is here, they don't give a fuck what happens to that kid. They don't care if you're able to take care of that child. As a matter of fact, if you're not able to take care of that child, they're going to blame you for that shit too. Oh, now you want to be on the public's dole. Now you want to be on welfare. Why would you have that kid if you couldn't afford it? But like, I mean, I wouldn't have had this kid if like y'all didn't make me though. Right? They don't believe this shit. And it's high time that a lot of us start recognizing that, right? But yeah, man, this is America though, right? It's America. So that's in proud to be an American. Now, another story that we got here, proud to be an American, man. So we were talking about, you know, Super Tuesday. This has been a heavy political show. I know y'all, but it's a lot, man. I feel like I got to get this shit off my chest, bro. So Super Tuesday happened. A lot of people went out. They executed their, you know, constitutional rights to go out there and vote. But in Texas, they made it real motherfucking hard to do that. To the tune of some people waited 7 hours to cast their ballots. We're getting this story here. This comes from newsandguts.com. It says that Texas has eliminated hundreds of polling locations across the state, especially in minority areas. And that's what happened. Voters in some areas had to wait hours in long lines to cast their ballot. Some waited as long as 7 hours. Hervis Rogers waited until 1:30 a.m. Wednesday before Wednesday morning to vote in Houston. It says long wait times plagued the Lone Star State all day following the 2013 Supreme Court decision to nullify the preclearance practice put in place under the Voting Rights Act. At least 750 Texas polling places, at least 750 Texas polling sites have been shuttered. In the absence of advanced federal review of the potential discriminatory effects of these decisions, some of the counties that saw the highest numbers of closures include Dallas, Travis, and Harris counties, also have large Latino and Black populations. But without this essential component of the Voting Rights Act, it's difficult to ascertain the effects of these changes will have in the communities of color. So here's a story from Channel 2 down. I believe this is in Houston. Let me pull this up. Let's play this.
Large turnout this Super Tuesday resulted in some long lines at voting centers across the Houston area.
Channel 2's Bill Barajas is live at Texas Southern University, where people have been voting hours after the polls officially closed. Bill, good evening.
Well, at its peak, people here at TSU say they've waited about 4 hours to get to the front of the line. The front of the line just behind me there. The line has quite dwindled down since we first got here. Earlier today, the line was as far as the eye could see. We actually walked that line from the front door to the end of the line, and it actually took us about 2 minutes and 11 seconds. One of the problems, just 8 voting machines. The county clerk's office telling us they deployed another 14 to help with the amount of voters waiting, which seemed to help speed up the process. Now, I want to bring in Mr. Ricky Ford. Want to interrupt you just for a second, sir. Sure. You came out here to vote, saw that there was a long line. Talk to us about what you decided to do then.
Well, I literally, after being in line for so extremely long, I literally decided to go to my car and get several instruments and actually also a stool, and to come out and entertain the people in order to take their minds away from this physical struggle, this mental and physical struggle.
And how long have you been waiting?
Hours and hours. Until literally I had to go and get a stool because, you know, my feet, my legs.
Well, you're almost there. We wish you the very best. Thank you, Mr. Ford. Again, the line's starting to dwindle down now. People coming out of the library here at TSU. Now, Texas Organizing Project, a nonprofit which organizes the Black and Latino communities, alleges that the long lines was part of a ploy to discourage minority voters. In a statement, they said, TOP has been working for years to grow the Black and Latino vote in Harris County, so we're thrilled to see this historic turnout, but it's equally infuriating that our community's vote is being thwarted by long lines and malfunctioning machines, said Crystal Zermino. We also asked the Harris County Clerk's Office. They responded with this. My office proposed a joint primary election, which would have allowed any voter to vote on any available machine at each polling location. This was rejected by the parties, which means both parties have an equal allocation of machines for each polling location. That from County Clerk Diane Troutman. And again, people coming out to congratulations and cheers as they're able to vote. The line slowly starting to dwindle down here. The elections office telling us they will remain open until everybody is able to cast their ballots. Live from TSU, Bill Barajas, KPRC Channel 2 News.
I detect a little Jordan.
All right. So, yeah, man, here's the thing. The reasons why they will allow for there to be extremely long lines for voting is because they want to discourage you from being able to get there in the first place, right? You got a lot of people who can't afford to be standing in line to vote. Like, they can't afford 7 hours out of their day to set aside for voting, right? I got to go to work. I got kids at home that need to be taken care of. I've got an elderly parent at home who needs to be taken care of. I can't wait and stand in this line 7 hours to execute my constitutional right to vote. And so what do those people do? They leave and they don't execute their right. And that's precisely what they want you to do. That's precisely what they want you to do. So, this is, you know, I want to applaud everybody who like withstood that line and stood in that line for 7 hours. I don't know if I could have done it, right? I don't know if I could have done it. Maybe like leave and come back. But then like if you leave, is there the ability for you to come back? Right? Like, yo, I was in line earlier, but I had to go home and use the bathroom real quick. I need to get back in line. Like that sort of thing. Like to make it this difficult to vote should be against the law, right? Should be against the law. The like they talking about the Harris County clerk was talking about, yo, we allocated equal number of polling machines to each of the parties, this, that, and the other. Hey, listen, y'all need more machines. Y'all need more polling places. Y'all close a lot of polling places. If there were more polling places, the lines wouldn't be as long because, hey, guess what? We ain't supposed to be over on this part of town anyway. We're supposed to be close to the house where I can go vote. But y'all keep polling. They close the polling places and they have less polling stations allowed for these polling places, resulting in these long lines, resulting in these people having to wait 7 fucking hours to cast their ballots, man. But it's a concerted effort. It's been happening since the Supreme Court gutted parts of that Voting Rights Act. And it's appalling, man. It's appalling that that's happening. But that's proud of being American, right? Only in America. Right. So we got that going on. Now, another story that we got going on. This is actually some good news for once here in Proud to Be in America. We got some news coming out of Georgia. And the reason why Georgia is here in Proud to Be in America in a good light is because right now, man, they are registering so many voters that the Georgia Republican Party can't purge their asses fast enough. All right, so we get this. We got this story here. This comes out of TheHillReporter.com. It says the 2018 gubernatorial race in Georgia was a controversial one. Democrat Stacey Abrams lost to Republican Brian Kemp by a little over 50,000 votes. Prior to the election, Kemp, then Georgia Secretary of State, was accused of illegally flagging and delaying the voting applications of black voters. The 2020 elections in Georgia will again be hotly contested with multiple congressional and Senate seats up for grabs. The state has continued to purge voters from the rolls at a rapid rate. According to a new report from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, though, new voters are signing up at a rapid rate and outpacing the purges. A heavy percentage of these new restrictions come from voters aged 18 to 34, normally fertile ground for Democrats. The share of white identifying voters is also decreasing as it stood at 59% compared to 62% in 2016. Mike Carnathan from the Atlantic Regional Commission told the AJC, "We're seeing an aging cohort that's majority white, and then you see an increasing younger age cohort that's majority non-white. That's exactly what the future of Metro Atlanta holds when it comes to the composition of the population." The Democratic Party of Georgia's Scott Hogan said, "In every way that benefits the Democratic Party, Georgia is in play. The state is going to go blue. It's just a matter of when this year." The state of Georgia is increasingly being considered a purple state with real opportunities for Democrats in 2020. So, yeah, that's the other part of this equation, right? When they're trying to purge those people who are registered voters, trying to question their ability to even register to vote, not to make the lines long and to close polling places, but also challenge the ability of these people to even register for the process. So kudos to Stacey Abrams. When that woman decides that she's going to either run for president or she becomes a part of either one, Bernie Sanders or Joe Biden's campaign, I can't wait to vote for her. I can't wait to vote for someone like Stacey Abrams. Real talk, man. They are doing the work, the yeoman's work of getting people registered to vote, getting people a part of the process. Now, one of the things that I will go back to, and I said this earlier when I was talking about Bernie Sanders supporters, they are registering voters of 18 to 34 years of age. Hey, okay, you did the first part. You registered. Please go vote. Please go vote. For real. For real, for real. But yeah, that is that's been proud to be an American, y'all. And y'all know what time it is.
The champ is here. 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 The champ.
All right, our champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report Podcast is none other than black voters. All right, black voters are the champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report Podcast. And the reason why black voters are the champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report Podcast, not only because of those voters in Texas who waited 7 hours to cast their ballots and make sure that their voices was heard in the electoral process in the Super Tuesday primary, but also because black voters, let it be known that the Democratic Party does not move unless black voters have a say in it. The Democratic Party does not move unless black voters have a say in it. I'm going to do Umar Johnson. I say the black voters make sure that the Democratic Party does not move without our votes. Right. And so, you know, when it came to some of these early voting states like Iowa and New Hampshire and Nevada, Iowa has like a caucus and it's kind of like undemocratic because, you know, again, that's one of those all day long kind of processes. People don't have all day to like be a part of that shit. Let them people go ahead, go in the primary and vote. I'm sure the numbers will change depending upon the population. And if like, yo, let's go straight ballot. Let me go out here and vote. Like, don't try to convince me to go vote for somebody else. Let me vote for who I believe in. And in New Hampshire, where, you know, white state, you know what I'm saying? But it wasn't until you start seeing votes coming through where there was a lot of black people, South Carolina and in Texas and in Tennessee and in, I believe Alabama had a primary this week. Some of the places in the South, Virginia, I believe North Carolina also had their primary this past week. Black voters changed the trajectory of this particular primary, right? Now, to the Bernie Sanders wing, I want to tell y'all, y'all didn't get those votes, right? I want to tell y'all, too, as I explained earlier, the reason why you didn't get those votes is because y'all have been very dismissive of the black voters in the South. Black voters move the Democratic Party. Black voters are the base of the Democratic Party. Black women voters in particular are the base of the Democratic Party. If you don't excite those people, you ain't going nowhere. And they made their voices heard loud and clear on Super Tuesday. So, black voters, man, are the champ of the week this week here at the Spare Report Podcast, man. Like, they made their voices heard. Some of them overcame terrible odds, right? Like, having to wait 7 hours in order to go cast a ballot is fucking ridiculous, but they made it happen. And so because of the endurance and the determination of the black voter in the South, man, y'all nothing but respect. If I could, I would tip my hat to y'all, but I can't take my headphones off, right? But yo, man, listen, I know this wasn't as funny a show as last week, but yo, man, I mean, you know, just this is what it was, man. It was a lot of political shit going on, and I felt I needed to talk about it, especially considering everything that we have at stake right now. But before we get out of here, Let me remind you guys how to get in touch with us over here at the Spare Report Podcast and let your voice be heard. Go ahead and hit up the hotline, area code 313-288-0485. That's area code 313-288-0485. Leave those voicemail messages. Of course, those messages will get played here live on the show and responded to in kind. You can also email us here at feedback@thespareandpoor.com. That's feedback@thespareandpoor.com. Leave us those emails, and of course, those emails will get read here live on the show as well. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. My name on both of those platforms is Mr_Span. So go ahead, follow me there. Chop it up with your man Span throughout the week. Hit us up on iTunes and or Stitcher with a 5-star review. Those 5-star reviews are the ones that get read here live on the show. We really appreciate everybody who goes about the business of doing that. It doesn't cost you a dime, just a couple minutes of your time to let everybody know why you're rocking with us over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. Also, hit us up on our website, www.thespanreport.com. You can leave comments there. You can listen to the shows there. You can vote in the polls when we put one up on the website, man. And also, you can donate to the show as often as you like, as much as you like. And of course, we really do appreciate every dime over here at the Span Report Podcast Network. This shit ain't free. It costs money. And so we appreciate everybody who contributes and helps us, make this thing happen, especially on the live shit. So So our Patreon patrons, we love you. We really do. Y'all are the ones who allow for us to do this live here on Crowdcast, man. Real talk. And hit us up on our store. You know, get yourself some merch. Get yourself a T-shirt like your man's been rocking out right now. It's a lot of different ways to kind of patronize the show and contribute to the growth of the show. Like I said, man, we really appreciate everybody who contributes through 5-star reviews, through sharing links, through buying a T-shirt, through leaving a 5, like all sorts of different ways, man. We really do appreciate everybody who does that. And we can't do it without y'all, man. Real talk. But it is time for us to get on up out of here. I've been talking for about 2 hours now, and I'm a little tired. Like I said earlier in the show, man, your boy Span washed, man. He washed. But nah, man, I'm gonna get on up out of here, and I will talk to you guys again soon. But until next time, fam, peace.